Oh, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. Happy to report that I am chatting with Chris Temple, founder and editor of The National Investor. Chris has been traveling pretty much this whole week, so this is really the only time that we have had a chance to get together and recap some of the, well, very volatile moves and positive moves for the most part for a number of markets, including the precious metals. Let's start off with the precious metals here, Chris, because it was kind of a quiet week for gold until just yesterday, but silver was putting in some very nice gains, and today both of those precious metals are giving back some of their gains. Gold now trading right about 1426, right back into this range that it has been in, but silver is right around 1620, and that's even being down about 20 cents today. So at one point yesterday, silver was trading at a new high for this year, 2019. Can I get your general recap on the moves and kind of the surprising nature of silver moving so aggressively just this week, while gold was still holding many of its gains and testing out the upper limit of this recent trading range?
Well, aside, Corey, from the fact that copper has finally moved a little bit in recent days, I didn't see anything fundamentally to drive silver. There are always in the past times when gold moves higher when silver eventually catches up. And in fact, that's how you know that speculative money is coming in, and it becomes all about momentum when silver's gains start to outpace those of gold. And that's when the crying starts afterwards, when people get too excited, they buy near at the top and it goes down. Now, I have been a little infamous lately for suggesting that I didn't think that silver was worth worrying about to any great extent unless and until we saw inflation move higher more broadly and silver was able to go up with the other commodities. Because in my view, silver, and I still believe this, silver is an industrial metal more than it is a precious metal. So I would look at silver's rally with a bit of a jaundiced view. Not that it's going to collapse or anything like that, but I am much more enamored of gold because central banks the world over, especially anywhere east of Germany, it seems, are buying gold with both hands. They aren't buying silver with both hands. And that, to me, is a tiebreaker between the two, especially when the central banks are all talking various ways about how much more easing they're going to be doing.
Yeah, and that's something we will get into, but I think your comment that, you know what, sometimes silver does just draw that speculative money when, quite frankly, gold was running, and finally silver started to play some catch-up. But let's also talk about the U.S. dollar, too, because the U.S. dollar, throughout June and July, it's kind of a mixed bag. It managed to put in a slightly lower high, or a higher low, sorry, at 95.36, and that's slightly above that 95.17 back in March. But that run really petered out fairly quickly, and now we've seen some recent volatility with the dollar up today, but still very much, again, kind of in this trading range that it has been in with a slight bias to the upside. What's been the main drivers here, and where do you see the dollar going?
Well, there's a variety of drivers, and I've said numerous times for a while now, Corey, the number of reasons why any surprise move in the dollar is much more likely to be to the upside than down. It was interesting yesterday when the New York Fed president, John Williams, was interpreted as suggesting that the Fed might cut the federal funds rate 50 basis points at the end of this month rather than 25. The dollar hardly moved. And I think part of the reason for that is that the markets are still seeing, at least currency traders are, stock traders might be oblivious because they keep bidding stocks higher, but currency traders at least, and I think those who are in sovereign debt, see that the whole global trade situation is not getting better. There's a lot of there's a lot of signs that the U.S. is going to get absolutely nowhere of any significance with China. Now there's different fights with Europe, whether it's over taxation, whether it's over fining U.S. tech companies or whatever the case may be. So now the president here, President Trump, is getting his dander up over that. And look at the euro again today. I mean, yeah, and I've said it before, anybody, whatever the Fed does, anybody who would be bullish long term, the euro needs their head examined. because the handwriting is much more on the wall with what's going on over there, their banking system, their politics, the whole deal. So almost all of this, I think, dead cat bounce rally that the euro had from its low the end of May, it went up a little bit over $1.14, that's almost all gone now. And don't forget, and this is the interesting comment yesterday that came not from Williams, but from Vice Chairman Clarida, about interest rate differentials in the world. The ECB meets next week before the Fed does the following week. And the ECB is believed to be ready to unveil, possibly that soon, a new inflation targeting mechanism where they're really going to throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at trying to get the economy and inflation moving over there. And that sure as heck isn't going to be bullish for the euro. So to me, even though, as we all heard afterwards, the comments that Williams made suggesting there might be half a point rather than a quarter point cut in rates, the New York Fed came out with a public statement and walked that back and said, well, he wasn't talking about the Fed's upcoming meeting. He was speaking in general academic terms of what central bank policy can generally be. You know, and we can believe or disbelieve that. But Clarida's comment yesterday was, I think, just as telling. And it's why a lot of people who think that, especially now with a new debt ceiling fight again in the U.S., so you don't want to own treasuries. Hey, like Richard Clarida said, when yields the rest of the world are so low, some of them in negative territory, there's only so much of a difference there can be. So I think what could move the Fed from a 25 basis point cut on the 31st, which is a certainty, to a 50 basis point cut, which is a little less than a coin toss right now, is if the euro is really hammered after whatever action the European Central Bank takes, and especially if the euro is making new lows against the dollar going into their meeting, that, as much as anything, will get them to cut 50.
Okay, that's interesting. So you think the ECB might actually, in a way, kind of force the Fed's hand into a more aggressive cut because of kind of the moves in currencies. But regarding John Williams' comments yesterday, doesn't it seem like we're back in this scenario where the Fed is now trying to throw out these little trial balloons to see if they can talk the markets in certain directions, just because of how quickly the markets reacted to Williams' comment, and then how quickly a retraction was issued that made the markets move in a different direction?
Well, I mean, you look at gold. Gold went up $30 and then down 25 on that, for crying out loud. And, you know, I've made the comment before, not original to me. I've heard other people make this characterization that some of these Fed officials, you know, they treat us all like lab rats. If we use this word or this phrase or we say this, how are the markets going to react? Okay, well, maybe we'll say this next week and see how they react to that. It's a stupid way to run monetary policy, but that's the mess they've created for all of us.
Yeah, unfortunately, and now we're all just kind of sitting around watching and waiting for what the Fed is going to do. It's even kind of overshadowing earnings season that we are in, and also overshadowing some events that should be moving, you would think, the oil market a bit more. Oil, after the U.S. shot down an Iranian drone, oil did react, but it wasn't exactly screaming in either direction. What do you think about the oil picture right now?
The oil picture is still hostage to two things, Corey. I mean, there is a, you know, the differential between Brent, which is going to be more responsive to anything that happens in that part of the world, and West Texas or New York prices, which are all about the oil glut and oversupply in the U.S. specifically. That's really what the market is still hostage to. The world is swimming in oil. More so than most times over the years. That's number one. And number two, here again, you've got these fears, and there have been some better numbers lately out of China, a consequence of them having in 2019 so far an unprecedented amount of stimulus in that country. Never happened. Not even in 2009 and 10 did they do this. So China is just really going nuts. So you think that the European Central Bank is, or the Bank of Japan, China is just really going. They got the accelerator through the floor with monetary and fiscal policy both over there for the most part. So when you have that happening and that's still not moving the needle very much, it's telling you that, especially now, you know, we're in the middle of summer. We've probably seen the peak gasoline price, all else being equal in the U.S. There was a little bit of a pop when that refinery on the East Coast had its accident and was since shut down. But otherwise, you know, I just drove from, northern Wisconsin back to Florida on and off over the course of this week. And, you know, the most you see gas is maybe $2.80 a gallon or something like that, average through Tennessee, which is a nice place to buy gas. One place I got it for $2.34. The question is, when we get to the end of this year, toward the end of this year, and nothing has happened yet with China of any significance, and I doubt there will, when all of the central bank added rate cuts and quantitative easing have done virtually nothing to move the needle as far as economic growth, and all of a sudden a still oversupplied oil market sees that and the oil price starts drifting back down in the 40s, you know, what do we have to worry about then as far as debt? I mean, the whole world and global financial markets dodged a bullet when oil bottomed at the beginning of 2016. And a lot of companies started going bankrupt. And I was even saying at the time, and I wasn't the only one, that, you know, is this going to be the real estate and mortgage bust that's going to take everything else down? This time it's going to be the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of bad debts that oil companies have. But, you know, they did a lot of extend and pretend, and most of these companies lived to fight another day. But there's still a lot of stress out there. So that's going to be an interesting market to watch. You know, a lot of us for a while now, Corey, have bemoaned the fact that even at times oil has rallied, oil stocks have done relatively little. And that's probably a reason why, is a lot of people are looking over their shoulders and still looking at this oversupply and wondering, especially if you have not only no improvement, but a further deterioration in the global trade picture and oil really gets hit. Now you got credit issues again, and perhaps systemic issues that'll follow that.
Yeah, again, we don't know when that will actually matter, but it's something you and I actually have talked about for a little while now, the issues that could happen in the oil patch with the oil companies. Let's just take a look at your overall views, though, and if they have changed. We have the trade situation that has deteriorated just in the last week or two. We also have the central banks, again, trying to see almost who can be more dovish day to day, but we do have some meetings coming up. Precious metals have been moving higher. U.S. equities were pretty boring this week. The U.S. dollar was back and forth. Any changes to your overall views or trading strategies?
Not really. I think long term, the odd couple is still a great thing. The sell-off in treasuries, I think, is over with. I don't see anything that's going to change that. The only thing that could possibly change that, Corey, would be if you get a 50 basis point cut from the Fed and some hopeful talk on trade and the performance of the global economy. You know, one of the reasons why you've got to be skeptical still, despite the liquidity, despite these nominal new highs again for U.S. stocks anyway, is that you don't see Treasury sell off when you get what is supposed to be good news. If this was legitimate, and if the markets could believe, and I could believe, that you're going to get an extended period of growth because of better trade policies, more central bank money printing or whatever, then you should be seeing sovereign debt sell off significantly. Not dramatic. You're not going to see the 10-year treasury go back to 3%. We may not see that for years. But you shouldn't see the German Bund, which was negative 40-some basis points, then negative 18, I think, on a rebound. Now it's negative 32 again. You shouldn't see money still getting shoved into, you know, $13 trillion plus now of negative yielding debt, 2% 10-year debt in the U.S. That wouldn't be happening if people really believed that there was going to be something moving. I would like nothing more than to see silver rally with copper, with oil, with commodities across the board, ags included. If you get some good news on trade and the worries for the global economy go away, then you'll finally see Treasury sell off some. But the odds of that are very long. Gold wins almost in either scenario, because, and we'll talk about this maybe in the next week or two, this year's theme, and I don't even know if it's out yet or not, but I'll tell you what it is before it starts, is going to be inflation targeting at this year's Jackson, Wyoming meeting at the end of August. And that's when you're going to start to get some additional glimmers, maybe beyond what even the ECB gives us next week and the Fed is already talking about. You're going to get some glimmers of how, as I've quipped before, they're going to retire the helicopters and break out the cargo planes.
All right. Well, Chris, we're going to wrap it up there. Some interesting moves just this week. I'm glad that we had a chance to recap where everything went and if anything changed your outlook. And I know it doesn't sound like much did, but boy, was it ever an interesting week seeing all this money just fly into silver. No, I guess that's maybe a little bit too drastic, but it was a very interesting week, especially for the precious metals. Chris, thanks for taking some time. I'm glad you're back and have a great weekend.